Excellent. Okay. Welcome, everybody. This is module one, our first call. I'm just going to share a couple of slides with you just so we've got something to kind of look at and contemplate together. What we're talking about today is our sort of basis for our approach as self-belief coaches, which I'm going to just call you now for the next 6 months. As self-belief coaches, how do we see self-doubt? What does it mean to us? You may or may not have had a chance to look at the videos. I know there was a little technical glitch with getting access to some of them. I apologize for that. We've figured out exactly what was causing that, and it is resolved. So that shouldn't happen again for any of the other modules. So some of you may be coming into this a little cold, if you like. But we're going to talk about some of those concepts today. So we're going to talk a little bit about the sort of meta principles, which is a fancy old word for what happens in these calls. You know, how does this work? We'll do a little bit of a reflection on orientation week, whether you participated or not. And then we'll talk a little bit more about self-doubt and in particular the archetypes, which you may or may not have had a chance to have a look at. So we'll go with where you're at and we'll see where we get to. Okay. So meta principles, I guess what I mean by this is let's talk about what we're going to talk about and how we're going to talk about it. Right. I want you to feel really informed around the way that everything is structured in this program. It's not just cobbled together as a series of ideas, right? There is a real logic to this program, and it's designed to help you develop as much as teach your clients this work. So every aspect of this is intentional, right? Everything that we do, the timing of that, and the way it's done is intentional. So if it doesn't work for you, then tell me, right? Because it won't be by accident. And the idea here is that, you know, I'm heavily invested in your experience. So however this is shaking down for you, please know that you can always come to me, come to Scott. We've tried to set up as many ways to interact with this material and to play with it as we can, as is feasible. I would love to have us all in a room together, but you know, we'll take what we can get. There's no right way to do this either. Like, you don't have to do anything in this program. You're a completely sovereign adult being, right? So there's no right way to do this. I'm completely unattached to the way that you take this material and use it. I have no expectations for you. You can feel free to kind of let go of any ideas of being a good student, a good coach, a good human, any of those ideas that we might have just integrated into our systems as part of our own ways of keeping ourselves safe in the world, right? Particularly for us as women, there is this thing about being perfect, doing everything, right? That's a kind of social and cultural narrative. And this program is an endless invitation for you to experiment, right? To just show up, be part of this experience, play into this work, see what happens for you. And andragogy is a really helpful approach to think about the way that we'll actually incorporate these principles. And what we know about andragogy is that it is a concept for how adults learn, right? So we have a pedagogy, right, that we often experience when we were in school, where there's a teacher expert at the front of the room and they just tell you a whole lot of information and you take that on board and usually memorize it and at some point regurgitate it back and someone assesses you and gives you a pass. And for a lot of us, you know, that was a way that we kind of developed our self-esteem or not, right? Depending on how we showed up to those experiences. So I'm also aware that in coming into a learning experience, you would bring in your history of all your own learning experiences, which may have a relationship with your own self-doubt, right? So this is where the meta stuff comes in, right? So andragogy is a really helpful approach. And this has come from a guy called Malcolm Knowles. He was an American educator, psychologist. He died in the late 1990s, but most of his work was actually in the 50s and 60s. And he had these really cool principles of how adults learn. And I think it's super helpful for you to know as practitioners, because if you're going to be running group programs, then these principles help you as well, right? If you're working with more than one person, working with adults, this is really helpful to know. So his principles are that learning is connected to an adult self-concept, right? So who you know yourself to be, what you believe about other people and how the world works will also be present in how you learn, right? What your concept of you, who you are, that's going to be woven into all of this. There's a woman called Edna Murdoch, who is one of the sort of doyens of the coaching world, and she said, who you are is how you coach. And I have yet to come across an experience where that isn't true, right? So who you are is how you're going to do this work. And I think it's such a fantastic, like, reassurance that there is no right way to do this. Like, you just do you, yeah? The second thing is that you are going to bring your own experience. So you are not showing up to this as a fresh-faced youngster, right? You have accumulated a whole lot of experience and relationships. You have your own client experiences, as well as your experiences of self-doubt. All of that is so helpful and a fantastic resource for yourself and for learning in groups, right? So we need to kind of share and reflect that to make sense of things, right? So we need to kind of go, oh, this happened to me. What does that mean in relation to this information or this lesson, this learning? What's going on for me here, right? Knowles thought that adults have a readiness to learn. So his idea was, and look, he is probably going to be completely biased towards this because he's an educator, but his idea was that as adults, we keep wanting to grow and develop, right? Life throws shit at us and we have a choice to either kind of fold in on ourselves, especially if those experiences are really difficult, or we have an opportunity to kind of go, okay, who am I now as a result of this experience? And so there is generally a kind of readiness to engage in that. We want to be part of our own lives. We want to feel like we're in charge of our lives. And so we want to learn. We want to figure out and make sense of our lives and what is going on. So outside of a kind of more formal learning environment, we really want to figure this out. We want to figure out who we are, how the world works, how we can support our people, all of that. And we're also very oriented towards application. So in this module, and just in this first part, I'm giving you quite a bit of information, right? And you're probably going, yep, this is nice to know. What the hell? If it doesn't apply to you, if it doesn't feel like this is useful, we have a good discernment around what we can use and not use. So it's less about the material. It's more about how does this help me? How does this help my clients? Right? I'm highly aware of that. You want practical, implementable solutions, learnings, tools, approaches. So this is probably going to be the most kind of concept heavy, if you like, module. But the idea is that we want to go get in there and get our hands dirty. That's how we figure stuff out. So it doesn't really matter what it is that we're learning. We usually want to apply it in some way. And the fifth thing is that adults, when it comes to learning, adults are intrinsically motivated, right? So all that means is that it comes from inside of us, our desire to learn. Once we leave school, learning is pretty much voluntary, right? We don't have to do it. So we choose what feels right for our next step, either personally or professionally, or you know, because it feels good to us, or because it feels interesting to us. That's why we'll pursue a particular path. So I'm assuming that you are all voluntarily here wanting to apply these ideas and concepts. You have that readiness to learn about both yourself and your clients, that you've got a shit ton of experience that you're bringing, right? And you are also a completely sovereign individual human with your own experience and all of that. And that is going to be here too, right? So I just want to point out that not only is that these are kind of nice ideas, like I think for me, they feel quite intuitively right, but there's also a big ass body of research that suggests that this is actually a really optimal way for us to learn, is to bring all of these things in. Yeah. So these ideas will be with us as we move through the program. There'll be heaps of opportunities for you to share and reflect and learn, and particularly in self-directed ways, in breakout groups and the practice pods and the study group. Like, we're kind of partnering in this, right? I want to share everything I have to give you. I'm heavily invested in supporting you, and we're partners in this, right? So it's a very much a peer group learning experience. Yeah. And I think that the cool thing that happens around this stuff is that you get to witness, as part of this process, like your own self-concept expands to hold new ways of seeing yourself and other people and how the world works. That to me feels like it's almost like the thing I didn't really realize when I first started teaching this work was just how much it would profoundly support you as coaches to grow and develop as well. Yeah. So that just gives you a kind of flavor of what to sort of expect from these calls, from this program, from how we're going to do this work. We're going to start with a bit of that self-directed learning. And I'd love to hear you reflect a little more on what might have come up for you as part of Orientation Week, which, again, a completely voluntary exercise there to introduce you to some of the concepts that are maybe swimming around for you, themes that we all experience when we're learning in a group of peers. We worry about all kinds of things, right? Self-doubt is present for a lot of that stuff. Things like comparison and getting it right and who we're behind and who we're ahead of. Hey, Vicky, welcome. You're fine. We haven't missed much at all. So the idea here is just to kind of explore about what might have come up for you, however you participated, right? So if you didn't participate in Orientation Week, it's really worth reflecting on that too, right? Was that an intentional thing? Is that a typical thing for you? Was it a case of, you know, time got in the way and it was over too quick? Or was there a sense of, oh, I don't know about sharing my thoughts about these things in a group of relative strangers? It's kind of it's all helpful, right? It's all useful to reflect on. So what I'm going to do is we're going to get into little breakout groups. And the idea is just notice, what was your experience of participating in Orientation Week? What do you notice about what you're bringing into this program just as we get started? And this, as a sort of like reflection around this, Think about this also through the lens of your own experience of self-doubt. What might be here for you? Right? So we'll start off by just having a little bit of a chat amongst ourselves. Okay. So I'm just going to pause recording. How was that? Does anyone want to share anything that kind of came up with the wider group? Feel free to. Yeah, Scott.
Well, first and foremost, thanks to Cassie and to Kirsty as well. But what came up for me, and it kind of like, I guess it hit me like a bit of a bolt out the blue, really, when you were talking, because I didn't complete the orientation week or the videos. And I've signed up to this course and been really, really looking forward to it. And yeah, I've had some challenges over the last week with my mom, who's been taken ill suddenly. But what came to me was I am pretty good at procrastination, but also I'm pretty good at using outside influences as an excuse. So even when I'm really looking forward to doing something, it's as if I create this element of protection where I can use an excuse to let me off the hook, if you will.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, when you were talking, and then I was talking to Kirsty and Cassie, I've done that for years. And then beat myself up over it as well.
Yeah. Anyone relate? Yeah. You're so not alone, Scott. And I love that it's just a bolt out of the blue, but recognizing that it's a pattern. And the first step to maybe making a different choice is knowing what that looks like for you now and realizing, oh, actually, this doesn't really work for me anymore. What else could I do? What other choices might I have? So, yeah. Mm. Brilliant. Thanks.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks, Scott. Anyone else want to share? Yeah, Jane. Looking very studious in your office there.
I know. I'm thinking of getting like a cloth to hang over it so it's a bit less. Obviously, you're not the first person to go, oh, you look very organised.
Yeah.
which kind of touches on what I was going to share because, I did your journaling prompts last week and found them really insightful, mostly in the way in which they created a really clear narrative for me.
Ooh.
And I thought, oh, okay, yeah, I get it now. I get the connection between self-doubt and how that shows up and how that stops me from experimenting and expanding and why I want that and how self-trust or so. I thought, oh, yeah, get it. It's really clever, very clever prompts. So I really enjoyed the slow, thoughtful way of introducing us to the program, allowing us to be in the room. And then I did the archetypes quiz. And in doing that, I was like, oh yeah, I know what my messages are. They're all about overwork, over delivery, being a good girl, you know, all of that stuff. Oh, so strong. And so then I did the archetypes quiz and I was really skeptical. I was doing it and I was going, rubbish. This is like Cosmo. This is like tick the box.
Yes.
Which box do I
love
tick?
It. Yes.
And as I was ticking boxes, a lot of mine were threes or fours, twos, threes, fours, nothing extreme, really. And I was like, yeah, what's this gonna tell anyone, me, you? How can you know? And then I read my three top archetypes and I went, ah, okay. That really resonates. That really resonates. I think I had conductor, advocate, and altruist.
Nice.
That was interesting. That's all I can say. But I thought, right, well, I'm going to experiment with not doing everything. So when I had your message this morning and it said, you don't have to be perfect, I was like, yes. There's at least 2-3 videos that I haven't watched yet.
Amazing.
That's an achievement for me. And then in the car, after dropping my daughter back, I managed to listen to those videos as I was driving. And then when I arrived this morning and you said, oh, you probably haven't had time to do all the work, especially if you didn't get the links. And I feel a bit disappointed in myself that I have done it all, because despite me saying I'm not going to push myself, I don't have to do it all. I can show up, and it doesn't matter if I haven't done the homework. It will be what it will be. I've still bloody managed to do it.
But I love this so much, Jane, because see how, like, this is such a beautiful example of you bringing your own self-concept in here, right? And sharing that so generously. And, you know, it's highly likely that some, like, some homework you could experiment with is not watching the videos for module two and just seeing how that feels. Right now, if you were coming into a kind of traditional learning environment, it's like, well, I'm expecting this, this, and this. And actually,
yeah,
a development path is to not do all of that.
Yeah, you see, that's quite scary for me. Even though I say I want to break that pattern, I am aware of the discomfort that it brings.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I love this so much, because the whole point of orientation week is to kind of stir some of this stuff up, right? Like, we're humans first. Even though we want to help our clients and all of that jazz, we're humans first, and we all, me included, absolutely. And I've been doing this work for over 10 years now, and I'm still like in it. So, you know, be kind to yourselves around, I'm going to overcome self-doubt in 6 months. Like, maybe that might be an unrealistic expectation. But what if you could hold yourself with some compassion and humour as you play with this stuff?
What's also interesting is, as I'm seeing that not as necessarily a part of my personality, but just the way in which my self-doubt shows up, it means that I'm hearing other people with absolutely no judgment. There is no right way to do it. There is the thing I wrote in one of the comments was, there is no top of the class. It just doesn't exist here, which is really interesting.
It is, isn't it? I think a lot of people have said to me, like, oh, hang on, if that's orientation week, this is like existential crisis territory. All I would say is, I think the more complexity that you can hold, like, both things can be true at once, more than two things can be true at once, the kinder you can be to yourself, and you have exactly what you're saying, Jane. There's no top of the class, no right way, and I genuinely mean that. There just isn't. So I'll just keep reminding you of that 150,000 times, and we'll all be good. Thanks, Jane. That was really cool. Really cool share. Thanks. Let's talk a little bit about self-doubt then. What the heck is it? What's all this about? So I've got a couple of things that can really help summarize this for you. Self-doubt is our inbuilt protection mechanism that holds us back from a perceived psychological risk. Right? So we feel, like Jane was saying, that discomfort, and like Scott was describing, you know, that sense of, this is a way of, you know, almost holding back from something that I even want to do, right? Because there's some kind of risk that's probably there. We don't always know what that risk is, and neither do our clients, right? So sometimes they can be like, nope, I'm totally good. I know exactly what I'm doing. I know exactly why I'm doing this, and that's it. But it's like, we can go a little deeper with that. We can play with that. So even when we have awareness, we can move through and look at why that's there. If we don't have awareness, that can be fun to really explore as well. So again, we don't even need to know why. It's more that let's kind of hold that to be true, that we're just holding ourselves back because something in us finds what we're about to do or not do risky. And the way that our self-doubt works is it will find literally a squillion different ways to say, don't do that, you might hurt yourself. And it's not going to use those words. It's going to say, don't do that, take care of your mum who's been unfortunately taken ill, Scott, you know. It's going to say, don't risk not looking at all the homework videos because what might happen, right? It's going to say really sophisticated, sneaky ways, don't do that, you might hurt yourself. Do not take that risk. And what gets, I think what is quite fun is that you start to kind of get a bit more onto yourself, right? You start to kind of go, hang on a freaking minute, something is happening here. I can sense that there is a perceived risk. Might not know what it is, but something is saying, hold back. And that is a really important moment because it's giving you that insight. Something is holding me back here. I wonder what that might be. I wonder what I'm protecting myself from. We don't talk about self-sabotage because it's really judgy to say self-sabotage for a start. Right, it is really judgmental. I'm sabotaging myself. It also suggests to me that there is a part of us that is trying to, you know, curtail our dreams, shit on our goals, stop us from doing the things that we want to do. Like, and what can end up happening is that we end up feeling like we've got to go into battle with that part of ourselves, right? So we don't want to do that. We want to fold it in. So calling self-doubt our self-protection mechanism is a way of starting with compassion, right? It's really easy. It's much easier, I think, to say, what might I be protecting myself from? Then what, I'm sabotaging myself again. Like it almost in, it's a kind of conversation ender. And I found that judgment and compassion are really hard to, it's really hard for those to coexist, right? So if self-sabotage is quite judgy, self-protection is more compassionate, we want to edge towards compassion always. A lot of clients, like dozens of clients have said to me, just that rephrasing changes my body's response. Like I feel physically different about my self-doubt. Self-sabotage can often feel quite clenched or weighted, heavy, constrained. Whereas self-protection, it's like, oh, I can just, oh, I'm protecting myself. There's some way that I can explore this, move with this. So there is this kind of somatic response here that's quite interesting. You may even experience that yourself. Importantly, self-doubt has nothing to do with capability or destiny, right? And everything to do with the ways that we've learned to preserve our sense of safety and belonging. So every single time you're protecting yourself, you're holding yourself back. That's got nothing to do with your capability. It's got nothing to do with, you know, what you're creating. It's always to do with how you've learned to stay safe. Always. And so that is a really helpful tenet to take into this work when you think about your clients. Like, what have they learned over the years in their lives that they needed to hold themselves back from doing something that create in order to create safety and belonging? What is it about this human that's in front of you that they've learned it's not safe to do that, it's much safer to do this? This kind of approach can be incredibly helpful if you find that you get a bit judgy with your clients, or you get to the point where you're like, just freaking do it. Why aren't you doing it? This is so obvious. You want to do it. I want you to do it. We both know it's the best thing for you. Why can't you freaking do it? It's because something in them says that is risky. If I do that, it's going to put my safety and my belonging at risk. And I may not, it may not feel logical or rational, but it still is enough of a block to stop me from taking the next step. So instead of us all getting frustrated, right, we can get into that place of, I wonder what is going on there. I wonder why you're not doing that thing that we both know you want to do and would be a great thing for you to do. And I think this sets this kind of approach, this concept, sets this work apart from the kind of coaching that's like, here's your current state, here's your future state, just take the steps to get there. Because most of us know what the steps are or have a pretty good idea. Most of our clients know. But what we don't often know is why we're not taking the steps. And the reason we're not taking the steps is because we're trying to keep ourselves safe. And that might be the reason we're keeping ourselves safe is because deep in our memory banks, our body's memory banks, perhaps, sometimes even pre-verbally, we learned that we had to behave a certain way in order to keep ourselves safe. Or we learn if we do a certain thing, we get that validation and praise. Right? So, and that keeps us feeling like we belong, we're safe. So this is a key concept here, right? That all we're trying to do, all our clients are trying to do, is keep themselves safe. They're never not doing a thing or doing a thing to piss anyone off or to annoy themselves. And their sense of frustration, the best way to meet that is with some curiosity and some compassion. Right? Yeah, I can feel your frustration. I totally can sense that. And I wonder what's going on. Let's look at this. Right? And that alone, not meeting that with the same energy of frustration, that alone can create more safety, true safety, safety to actually explore what is going on. Yeah. So all to say that these concepts are things that we'll come back to again and again and again, and we'll look at exactly how this shows up for folks and all of that jazz. But I think, you know, some key things to sort of take with you is I believe our mission as three coaches is threefold. Firstly, it's to help our clients to understand and heal the root causes of their self-doubt. So the reasons why they believe they have to do something or not to do something in order to preserve that sense of safety and belonging. We need to help our clients to understand that and heal that. And there are ways to do that are really safe. We also want them to help them to feel resourced, to respond in healthier ways when their self-doubt gets activated. So just because you understand it and you kind of have healed it, it doesn't mean that it's not going to come up again and again and again, especially if this is a pattern that's gone on for often decades, right? But can we support our clients to feel a bit more resourced, right? So that they know they have a choice. I recognize this pattern. Here it comes again. Oh, yep. Okay, I'm noticing this. How can I make a different choice today? What else might be true? What else might be possible? Yeah. Because self-doubt's always going to be there. The triggers of self-doubt are always going to be there. But can we support our clients to feel resourced when those things occur? And thirdly, and I think, Jane, you alluded to this, is that when we start to see that our self-doubt, the responses that we tend to engage in, are always patterns of beliefs and behaviors, and actually nothing to do with our personality, you start to see what's possible if you just made different choices, right? If self-doubt is not holding you back, if you know you're completely resourced to respond in a way that feels good and healthy to you, then who could you be? What is possible for you? What might you be able to do or be, what might your self-concept expand into? And you know, for a lot of clients, and I work with a group at the moment of around about 50 women who are in self-belief school, which is where I teach some of these concepts. And that has been the number one learning is, oh my God, I have no idea who I could be, who I actually am underneath my self-doubt, because that's all I'm doing is responding to those triggers of self-doubt. I'm procrastinating, I'm being a perfectionist, I'm passively watching from the sidelines. If I was no longer doing all those things to take care of myself, but responding in healthier ways, I actually have no idea who I could be. Which is kind of fun, right? Kind of fun to see that. And I would also offer, I think that my oldest client who I worked with during lockdown was 79 years old, and she had this realization. And she is now like running some activist group in Gloucestershire. And I'm kind of like secretly just going, oh my goodness, this is amazing, right? This is so cool. I love that. I love that she could, I love that she could take this and create something so powerful. And for most of our clients, it's this quiet realization. Oh, I could do something else. I could make a different choice. That might change this relationship with my kid or my parent or my partner, my friend, just by making a healthier choice. So all of this is what we're here to do, right? So the archetypes, just to kind of finish up today. Who here has, we know Jane has done all the homework, but has anyone else got their archetypes? Yeah. So three have and two haven't. Okay. So let's, I was going to do a breakout, but maybe we'll just open this up. I'd love to know a bit more about, like, what was your experience of reading those archetypes? Like Jane was, I loved that you said, oh, it's a bloody Cosmo quiz. How's this going to help? Yeah, I love it. That you're not the first person to say that, Jane. I love it. So I'm totally unattached to it. Please feel free to share anything that came up during taking the quiz. What happened when you were reading your archetypes? What came up for you?
I love a Cosmo quiz.
Love it.
Or any kind of, you know, all of the Myers-Briggs,
yeah. Yeah.
Anything like that. And I know you said, obviously, it's not a personality thing, but yeah, it's just a way about how our self-doubt. So I've done it before on your website. That's how I first found you and your work. But I can't remember what came up for me. But when I was reading them, I was actually like, I feel like I'm scoring really high on everything. I'm like giving fours and fives for everything. How on earth is this going to come out for me? So I ended up being a diplomat, advocate and altruist.
Right.
And then when I was going just through the video, I was also trying to make sure I had actually done all the homework before the class, because I'm the opposite where I can procrastinate. But I was like, no, let me do it at the last minute. Actually, what stood out for me more was talking about the shadow sides. Because I've heard of shadow work before, and I've always thought, well, no, I had a really happy childhood and there wasn't really anything. But then as I was self-reflecting, and I'm going to go away and do some more self-reflecting, I was thinking, actually, I think there probably was some unconscious things, messaging throughout my childhood that maybe has kind of come into things. One example I can share is that I'm a Leo. And every time I see any Leo quizzes or anything like that, and it's all sort of, you know, likes the spotlight and all that, I feel really judged, and I feel like, no, that, because when I was a child, I was told to not show off. So that is kind of, as I was kind of reflecting on that, I was like, oh, maybe there is some things. And actually in our conversation with Kirsty and Scott, I was saying about how I don't think I ever really give myself to actually listen to an inner voice or I reflect, but maybe not on a deeper level. So I think this has already started to kick some of that off for me. So that's really interesting.
Well, and I'm also wondering, it might be interesting to reflect on the diplomat role, right? Because that's all about kind of keeping the peace, not pissing anyone off.
Completely. And even with that, I was thinking, because my background is hospitality, and what came to my mind is I can read a room, because I would have to read a room of 150 people dining plus a cocktail bar. Is there any problems going on over there? Is all the chefs happy? And can I step in straight away and smooth over any problems professionally? But then also I think I have done that personally as well. That was interesting.
Fantastic. I also just want to pick up on what you said about the shadow work stuff. I think shadow work has a huge branding issue. What it really means, if anyone's interested in depth psychology, which is where this comes from Carl Jung, is it's just what's hidden, right? So oft, I think shadow, it's like, oh, it's in the dark and monstery and all of that jazz. And I think actually, if you just think about what's hidden from our consciousness, you can start to see that there are shadows, and Jung even talked about golden shadows, right? The aspects of ourselves that are incredibly pro-social, right? Really lovely qualities that we're not quite ready to claim. So what we'll often do is admire other people that possess the shadows that aren't quite emergent in us. Right? So we'll go, oh, that person is amazing, and I love that they do this kind of thing, that they're this kind of person. And usually there's like, it's speaking to a part of us that we want to bring forward as well. So shadow work is just what's hidden from us, what we can't quite claim as being part of us. So yeah, cool. Love that, Cassie, thank you. Yeah, Kirsty.
It's funny because I looked at the self-belief coaching model before I did the questionnaire, and just looking at it, I was thinking, I don't see self-trust as a way that I respond to my self-doubt. That's not something that feels, oh, sorry, we have an air raid siren at 12 noon every day. I don't know if you can hear that. It's a World War II air raid siren.
Nice.
7 days a week. I live in Malta, by the way.
Yeah.
I didn't recognize self-acceptance or self-trust particularly. And then when I did the questionnaire, my number one was conductor, the second one was designer, and the third was reformer. So I had two in self-belief and one in self-worth, and just that just immediately resonated. Like, we're looking at the be perfect, overworking, the critic thing, I'm like, I know that's my response. So to see two of them in there out of three was kind of like, yeah, that makes total sense to me. I haven't had a chance to watch that video about the archetypes yet. I ran out of time on that one yesterday, so I'm looking forward to learning a bit more about each of those and the rest of them. But yeah, it was interesting, really interesting.
That's so cool, Jesse. Thank you. Yeah. Anyone else want to share anything? So the idea behind the archetypes is that it is really a way to define our experience and our response to self-doubt, because it can be quite amorphous, right? It's quite difficult sometimes to explain what we mean by self-doubt. And so there are often these kind of, and I like to think of it as underexpressed and overexpressed qualities, right? That come from our healthy adult self, right? The part of us that has access to self-belief and self-acceptance, self-worth and self-trust. As you've beautifully described, Kirsty, it's like some of that healthy adult self feels overexpressed and some of it feels underexpressed. I think I'm quite similar to some of you in that it's my self-trust and self-belief are pretty good. Self-worth and self-acceptance are probably the areas that I keep feeling like I'm coming back to, particularly self-acceptance. Right, that kind of accepting that I have needs and emotions is deeply inconvenient to me for quite a lot of my life. So So just noticing, oh, there's some stuff that's hidden from us. There's some stuff that's overexpressed and things that are underexpressed. All of these help to give us a sense of, you know, if we were going to work on our self-doubt, what might that look like? Where might that be? And what I would say is using this archetypes model as a kind of entry point into one-to-one work can be very, very helpful for your clients, because they get to sort of see, oh, there is, well, you both do, right? You both get to see, oh, here's where I may be, may have a pattern of overexpressed self-belief, that conductor quality that overworks to create safety. Or you might find that you have someone who has a ton of overexpressed, care for other people, that kind of people-pleasing stuff. So if they're in that altruist, I'm trying to remember the names of all of them, but in that self-acceptance state where you can sense, oh, this is a person that actually deprioritizes their own needs. This can help when you are working with someone and you realize actually setting homework for someone who has a conductor profile is probably not going to help them grow, because they're really good at doing that, right? It's more about saying, hey, Jane, you don't have to do your homework for module two. Just win it. See what happens, right? So you get to play with, what is that actually like? The stakes are quite low. It's, you know, nothing bad is going to happen here. But you get to experiment with that sense of risk, right? So for what I would suggest is taking the quiz if you haven't already, watching the video, and just kind of holding this model lightly. There's quite a lot in there. I totally appreciate that. There's 12 archetypes and all of that jazz. But this is just a way in for us to have a conversation with our clients around how their self-doubt specifically shows up, right? And there'll be aspects of those archetypes that don't resonate with them. So, you know, get them to give you their top three, and then you have a conversation about, oh, what does resonate for you? That's helpful for us to both know, right? And as we move through the program, you'll get really good at sort of seeing, you know, how you can support your clients given that they have a pattern, they have the patterns that they do. What almost always happens is that you find that your clients will consistently have quite similar archetypes, right? So I think, I'm not sure why that is really, but that has come up again and again and again. Sometimes they are a mirror of our own, right? And I guess that comes back to who we are as how we coach, right? So we attract like often. So just bear that in mind, you know, that you probably won't need to, you certainly don't need to memorize the whole model. Familiarize yourself with the archetypes that are interesting to you. And as you start to work with these, with your clients, you will start to kind of build more of an understanding of, you know, what ones are common among your client group. This can also help you if you're thinking about specific ways to support people. It's like, oh, well, if my clients are all in this kind of, you know, have this kind of aspect of their themselves is underexpressed, maybe I can create something that would help them to build that in a healthy way. Right? It's like, so always be thinking, how can I turn some money on for this? Right? How can I actually support my clients and build a product that would help? Yeah, that's totally for you to play with. Any questions at all about the archetypes model, the self-doubt loop, anything that's come up? Yeah, Scott.
Yeah, that was quite interesting what you were talking about with the the concept of protection. I remember in when we were in lockdown, I had some counselling for anxiety. And remember the counsellor, she told me to read certain books and some work by a guy called Stephen Porges.
Yep.
And I did do. And I also read a book by a girl called LaPera. What's the first name there?
Is that Nicola LaPera?
Nicola LaPera. Yeah. I found it really fascinating. Yeah. And what kind of like came to me was I was just surprised how many of our behaviours are part of our conditioning, and how this can affect the autonomic nervous system. But what's really interesting, what was interesting to me, I was going to ask you that anyway, but you know, we're not running away from saber-toothed tigers no more, are we? But that part of the brain, that limbic system, is still responsible for putting us into fight or flight, even if it's something psychological, isn't it?
Yeah.
And in my line of work, there's a lot being done now on behavioural finance, and they call it System 1 and System 2 thinking. System 1, you know, fight or flight. System 2, frontal lobe, that kind of stuff. And it's just really interesting to me that how quickly I, as a person, I fall into certain patterns, and it's making me think now, these certain patterns really there are there to protect me. And I don't know if anyone else has been in a situation like this, but I've got a relationship with a family member of mine who really irritates the life out of me. And I was making excuses up not to be in their company. And it just dawned on me that, hold on a second, this narrative I'm creating is a narrative which, in essence, and I was thinking, well, how do I benefit from this kind of behaviour? And then I was thinking, well, the way I benefit from this behaviour is I make all these excuses up so I do not have to be in their company. I thought, wow, that's kind of like a protection mechanism as well, I guess. Mm-hmm. So what you've been talking about over the last 20 minutes or so, you know, again, this has been quite a revealing morning for me, really, to be honest.
That's great, Scott.
Well, thanks for letting me share as well.
No, you're so welcome. It's only in the first module, so you get to play with this stuff for the next 6 months. And, you know, I love that. I think, you know, you're reminding me, Scott, of, you know, when I first started really researching self-doubt, and I just felt like I was having revelation after revelation. It was almost like, oh, God, I need to lie down. So all I would say is I love that you're having these, you know, these insights. I think this makes your work as a financial advisor and as a person who's going to be perhaps coaching people in this line of work, you know, that you can bring more of yourself to this is fantastic. So one thing I'd maybe recommend is, and this is for anyone who feels like this would be helpful, get a journal and write down some of the stuff that you're realizing about yourself. It can be super helpful just to reflect back. At the end of this program, you're going to reread those notes and go, what the heck? You know, what happened? Who was that person? I feel different.
Yeah. I got to be honest, thank you for Kirsty as well, because she, when we were in the group, she mentioned something about journaling. And she said, when you've journaled, it looks real. And I'd never looked at it from that perspective, really. And so that kind of resonated with me as well. So, you know, it was great to be in the group with Kirsty and Cassie. So, yeah, it's been a revelation morning of a morning for me.
That's great, Scott. Yeah, and don't forget, Jane, our fellow classmate, is also a deeply expert in creative writing and for self-reflection. So she's definitely your woman as well. So, yeah. Amazing. Jane.
Nothing about journaling, but I just wanted to, I guess, clarify some what you were saying about overexpressed and underexpressed. So I'll use an example from one of my architects, I keep calling them architects, archetypes, okay, was the altruist. Mm-hmm. And I wrote down, I was not held in a psychological safe space growing up, which is why I want to and do create and hold psychologically safe spaces for other people now. So is that my need to hold safe spaces for other people? Is that a form of overexpression? Because I'm doing it for other people and not always doing it for myself, is the overexpression, when, because there's nothing bad about holding safe spaces for other people, but if I do it at the expense of holding space for myself, it's an overexpression. Is that the under over thing?
Bingo. What I would offer is, I think one of the traps we can fall into is trying to say, I'm this kind of person, and then we apply it as a kind of blanket to our whole lives. And one of the ways we start to hold more complexity is to come back to the specific context, right? So you have a capacity to hold space for other people, which is, you know, one of the best aspects of you and of your work. And there will be times when I imagine you're doing that at the expense of your own needs, or when you're doing it for other motivators that maybe don't feel so healthy.
Or to meet my own needs.
Yes. Yeah. And the thing is, there's no right answer. You get to decide, can all of these things be true and I be okay with it? Right? Can it be that I'm meeting my own needs, I'm holding space for other people? Maybe I'm doing this when I actually am knackered and I don't have the capacity, but there's an expectation that I have to do this, and so I can't say no, right? Or maybe there is a sense that if I don't do this, something bad will happen, right? So those are the less healthy reasons to do it. But they're arguably just as valid. It just depends on your capacity to offer yourself compassion, right?
And if all those things are brought to the light, if they're brought into awareness rather than being things that drive you without you being aware, then at least you have the option of choice.
Exactly.
At least you've got room for maneuver, even if you don't always take that choice.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think sometimes, you know, going against your knowing, your inner knowing, your intuition, or just your sense of, I kind of know why I'm doing this, I'm on to myself here. If we go against that and do it anyway, even though we know it's not in our own best interest, that is also a huge experiment, because you get to see what happens to me physically, emotionally, psychologically, as I go through that process, knowing that I made that choice, reasonably knowing what was happening, and I get to decide, can I retain that awareness so that next time something similar comes up, I'm perhaps making a more informed choice, going, oh, actually, that depleted the shit out of me for 2 days. I can't be around that group of people for that length of time.
Yeah.
All of that sort of stuff. So I think, yeah, adding in complexity and context is key.
Can I ask a question, Jane? When you say you're holding a space for people, what do you quite mean by holding a space? Sorry if I've not picked that up.
That's really good. No, it's a really good question. Well, specifically what that might mean is when I run writing workshops, I'm not teaching people how to write a poem or a novel. I'm actually creating a space where people feel free and able to write and express themselves, and share what comes up, who feel safe to be seen and heard, and also to witness and hear other people. And so by holding a space, I suppose I'm talking about how you create the conditions for safety for people to be with themselves, to express themselves. If that does that make sense?
Yes, it does, yeah.
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 Major. Yeah, Vicky.
I did the quiz. Ruth Poundwhite gave me the quiz when she was studying last year, and I haven't redone it. I don't know if you'd recommend redoing it again.
Definitely.
But okay, great.
Yeah, because you will get three of them this time. Yeah.
Okay, well, she gave me three last time, but should I do it? Should I not do it again? But maybe I'll do it again just out of interest. But what she gave me last time primarily came through as Scout, as the kind of lead one. And I can't remember what the other two were. But when I was reading it, and it was interesting what Jane was saying there, that kind of reflection about the past and childhood and things, and the scouts tend to carry, I'm reading there, a shadow wound that no one can really be trusted, and they need to be prepared for something to go wrong. And for me, rereading that actually now, because I've started therapy recently, brings up quite a lot of like, oh, I know, because some of the places I'm going to in therapy now, that's bringing back to that. And I guess when I read it and then think, if I applied this to a client, I feel like I'd be going into a therapy childhood trauma space, and that really scares me, because I don't feel I'm equipped and able to do that. I just wondered if you could talk a little bit around that, because I know some of these things for people I try and touch on with clients. You know, where's that coming from, and where have you been made to feel like that before? But I feel like that's a whole box I'm a bit afraid to open with coaching clients.
Yeah, completely understand that. So there's a couple of things here. One is, this is obviously like on top for you, right?
Yeah.
So it may be that you do that thing that we all do, where you're like, okay, well, if it's true for me, it might be true for everyone, and I'm not sure what to do here. So all I would offer is that the archetypes are in a spectrum, right? So it may be that another person that you work with who also has a scout is actually like, yeah, I do tend to mistrust people, and it just means I don't delegate anything. So it may not, and you figure out, and you can ask some questions about, well, why do you think you do that? Where did you learn how to do that? You know, it's like, oh yeah, well, you know, I was one of six kids and nothing got done unless you did it yourself. Classic scout, right? Often from that kind of environment. So all to say, we're going to be meeting our clients where they are, and some will or won't have already had some insight around why this is their pattern, but also may well have healed those even quite traumatic root causes. So just to offer that all of these are on a spectrum. And secondly, I completely affirm what you're saying around, you know, we don't want to go cross over into the boundary of therapy. We're going to talk a lot more about that as we move through the program, particularly in module 3, where we talk about trauma-informed coaching. And just to give a kind of highlight reel, the way we approach this is that we're looking at what's happening in the here and now that may have roots back in the there and then, right? So we're looking at what's happening now for the client, because we don't need to revisit the original experience, and we want to minimize any chance of you know, making the client feel like they're back there, right? So completely understand that, and we will be talking about that a lot more. Yeah. Okay. I'm just aware of the time, so I just wanted to and I know I could talk about this stuff all day with you guys, and Scott probably needs a lie down after his revelatory morning, so I just wanted to talk a little bit about module 2, which is coming up. And module 2 is about developmental psychology, which is the kind of developmental coaching is kind of the body of work that's informed my approach to coaching quite a lot. And we'll be talking about what that looks like. I'm sharing a model which is really around, you know, what do we, when we talk about a self-concept, what does that look like? And what developmental psychology helps us to know is how we develop as adults, like throughout our adulthood. So watch the videos, have a play, get a sense of maybe where you sit in your own developmental stage, where you may be moving into another and different aspects of your life. And have a think about how those ideas might assist you as a practitioner. How might knowing about developmental stages help you to understand a bit more about your client's, you know, state of mind and self-concept? Both of those things would be helpful questions just to play with. Yeah. These first three modules, these first kind of theoretical modules, if you like, we're just setting the stage, right? So it may feel a little bit kind of theory heavy. Let it wash over you. It's all good. Please don't feel like you need to remember everything. And we'll just pick up these themes as we move into practice as well. Yeah. All right, loves. Any last questions or reflections before we close? Oh, good. Amazing. Well, have a lovely rest of your day. It's been so fun to get kickstarted. So, yeah, delighted you could make it. And see you all next week. Yeah. Okay.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Hello, everyone.
Thanks.